We were pretty much inundated with ghost sightings, walk-ins from around the world, predominantly in the Middle East, claiming they knew where Yosef was located. But the U.S. Embassy in Islamabad, Pakistan, came through with an informant that was scared that he was potentially going to die. And in the course of discussions with him, he indicated that he was very worried that he was going to be, he was very worried that he would be saddled or used or duped by Ramzi Yosef to carry a baby doll bomb on an American flag carrier out of Southeast Asia. So he was fearful of his life. He was also somewhat of a mercenary in that he wanted the reward monies. So within about a, oh, I would say 36-hour time period from the time that the informant first surfaced until our special agents hit the door in Islamabad, Pakistan, we had Yosef in custody. The challenge for me at that time and for all of us logistically was not only, how do we get Yosef into U.S. custody, but, how do we also extract our informant who had put his life on the line to bring this information to our attention.
What about the day you got him? What happened then?
Oh my goodness, that was one of those days that I vividly recall talking to our agents on our phone back and forth. We had a pretty much an open line that we had put together, trying to talk them through exactly what they were learning on site. I was physically seated, JJ, inside of the FBI SIOC, the Special Intelligence Operations Center. And in that room was John O'Neill, by the way. God rest his soul. John perished when the Trade Towers collapsed. And Bob Blitzer was there from the FBI. My boss at the State Department was also there. And I was on the phone with our agents in Islamabad, and they were relaying messages back and forth. And I remember them going to the hotel room, which our informant had specifically pinpointed. And I remember them asking me, "We're here. What should we do next?" And I said, "Well, heck, go in. Let's see if he's there." And I kind of figured that, I really at that point in time did not know if we had a good informant or just another one that was leading us down the garden path. And I could hear the radio chatter on the phone line. "We got him, we got him, we got him." And then our agent that was relaying the messages back to me said, "Fred, we have him." And I seem to recall something like, "Are you sure?" And he goes, "Yeah." However, he had dyed his hair red, which was somewhat unusual and somewhat problematic for us too, because he had some explosives and baby doll bombs in his room there in Islamabad, Pakistan.
But it also points out how terrorist tradecraft then and today haven't changed a whole lot when it comes to trying to hide, correct?
That's correct. And we've made a lot of strides since those time periods, JJ. But if you think about it, with the years that we've chatted about this, and since the first World Trade Center blast, soft targets remain vulnerable. Groups like Al-Qaeda are still laser fixated on trying to bomb or bring down passenger aircraft. It remains the holy grail of terror, going back to the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine in the 70s when they hijacked four planes. So I don't anticipate those two threats to ever dissipate in our lifetime. Soft targets or commercial aviation.